Ezra, Mayevsky, Shalom Aleichem. I missed you. I got very nervous. Okay. Shalom Aleichem. Okay, we're up to Ezra Perek Aleph. We're towards the end. There's one vart I want to mention. I didn't get a chance to tell you a Pasuk Zayin. We learned yesterday we're up to Pasuk Tes. Okay, that's what we're up to. But we discussed yesterday on Friday Pasuk Zayin and Ches. Want to mention one vart from the Ramban. It slips my mind where the Ramban is, but the Ramban says everything has a cheshbon. Everything, nothing happens by accident or by coincidence. In Pasuk Zayin, in Pasuk Ches, where it's mentioned that Koresh took out the Kleves HaMikdash, right? The HaMelech Koresh Hoitzi is Kleves HaShem Asher Hoitzi Nebuchadnezzar Yerushalayim Vayitnei Ves Elokav. And then Koresh took them out and he counted them. These Kelim are now being returned to Eretz Yisrael with the first wave of immigrants 18 years before the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Why did these Kelim merit an early return? The Mikdash will not be built until 18, 19 years later. So why are these Kelim being returned at this point in time? And Ramban answers, because these Kelim have already been in exile for 70 years. Everything has a cheshbon. They were taken by, it says in Melachim that Nebuchadnezzar, when he conquered Yehoiakim, he took with him Miksas Klei Beis Hashem. Some of the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash were taken with by Nebuchadnezzar, and that took place 18 years before the Churban Bayis. Nebuchadnezzar conquered Yehoiakim and replaced him with Yehoiachin, and took down with him at that point in time some of the clay based Hashem. So their time already has come. No, just like human beings, just like there's a cheshbon for a person, how long does his galus? Likewise, there's also a calculation for the kelim. There are 70 years, and we learned there are many layers of interpretation as far as the exact calculation of 70 years. 70 years from the time of the Nebuchadnezzar came to power, 70 years from Kibush Yehoiachin, 70 years from Kibush Yehoiachin, 70 years from Kibush Tzidkio. There are many different layers of 70 years. So the kelim also have their own 70 years. The 70 years is not just for people. Everything Hashem does is with a calculation, and therefore their time now came to be returned to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that's Pasuk Zayin and Ches. Now the Pasuk Tes. The Elul Misbram. Now we go into an exact enumeration of the Kalim. Here are the numbers. Agartile Zohav. What are Agartile? So Rashi just says something very generic. Mine Agartile Zohav. Mine Kalim Hain. These are different types of Kalim. Let's see the Mitsudos Tzioin. Agartle, shame kli, nothing but hamayim lenetilas hayodaim. I guess the mitzudah sinu that we were learning kitzshalach shulchanaruch, and we were learning tilsiyodaim. So he connected it to what we're learning in kitzshulchanaruch. But he says these are kelim that are used wash basins made from gold. The Ibn Ezra, I don't have it in front of me, and many others disagree with Mitsudos and learn, and Rashi is very vague, these refer to Kalim they used to collect blood. And the word agar tlay, it's a hard word to say. So agar. Agar means a basin. Agar means to bring together. And tleh is a lamb. So these were Kalim that were used specifically for lambs, for small sheep, small little animals, which were, since they were small, a lamb does not have that much blood, and they could afford to purchase, to create kelim of gold that can contain all the blood that a lamb would produce. Shloshim with 30. And then we have agar tlei chesef, olaf. So I think, I'm not exactly sure if this is in Medrash or if this is in Ibn Ezra, but this refers to elef, means 1,000, of course, but that's the number, not 31,000. But elef also refers to cows, larger animals. What's the word in the Torah for shgar alufecha? Shgar, what comes forth from alufecha? Same word, the same shurish of your cows, of your mature older animals. So they want to interpret it as a remez. It's true. The number is, of course, olaf is 1,000, but an agar tele. Now tele, the word agar. Tele, agar tele. Tele usually refers specifically to a lamb, but also can refer to a, in the bigger picture, can refer to an animal, a tele. It's a little bit of forced, but here when we use it in connection with the word aleph, it alludes to the parim, the cows. And a cow is obviously a much larger animal, produces an enormous amount of blood. If you've ever been to a slaughterhouse, the amount of blood that comes from a cow is enormous, and they were much larger, and being they were much larger, they could not afford to make these kalim from gold, they were made from silver. So we have agar tele, zov, are the kalim used for the small animals. Agar tele, chesef, are the kalim they use for kabolas hadam, for the larger animals. There were 30 of the gold and 1,000 of the silver. Then we have machalofim, tish of the estrim, we have 29 knives. Obviously these weren't just ordinary knives, these were beautiful knives. These are chalofim used for shchita, the shchita sakarbanos. You can imagine how many karbanos were in the history of these knives that were used for the various karbanos, and they were obviously very beautiful. The handles were decorated with the most expensive stones and gold and silver. We can barely imagine, we can't even imagine how expensive and how precious these chalofim were. The first point, why is a knife called a chalof? Because it represents the ultimate exchange. The ultimate exchange in life is from life to death. So therefore, a chalof takes an animal from a state of life to a state of death, and that's why they're called here now. So we have three different types of kalim mentioned over here, the agartle, zav gartle, chesef, and the chalofim. Again, either means wash basins, or it means utensils used for kabbalah sadam, for the various korbanos. Let's give you the Rashi. Pasuk test mislam shlo klei beis Hashem agartle mine kalim him, different types of kalim machalofim heim sakinim, knives v'hu loshen beis hachalifos. There was a chamber right adjacent to the ulam in the beis hamikdash that was called the beis hachalifos, where they would store the knives. Shalkein shayu noistem bo hasakalim, in that room is where they would store the knives. Hois nikre slishka beis hachalifos, it was called beis hachalifos because that's where the knives were stored. Then we have, okay, let's just see in the mitzudos. Okay, we I think mitzvahs we've covered. Okay, let's go now to Pasik Yud. Then we have Kifoirei Zahav Shloishim. Now the word Kifoirei over here, Mizrukos, so you see the Mitzudos is being consistent. The Mitzudos being that the Mitzudos translate the word agartele as bowls that were set aside for washing the hands. So therefore he's free to differentiate that kifoirei are bowls that are set aside for blood. Okay, now according to the Ibn Ezra and the other Farshim, there were different types. It's not exactly clear. It could be these were not these. It's not exactly clear the difference between the agar tele and the kifarei zahav, being that they both were set aside for blood. They're both set aside for blood. Why do we term one called agar tele and the other kifarei? So I do not know. But there were other types of utensils. Could be one did not have a base. We know that Rav Masechet Yoma tells us that purposely, the kalim, some of the kalim with the Beis Hamikdash came to a point. And the reason why they came to the point, they wanted to prevent the kohanim from putting the kalim down on a flat surface, because by doing so, that would cause the blood to congeal. If the utensil did not have a flat surface, came to a point, you could not put it down. You always had to be holding it. And when you hold it, you can shake it, you can stir it, and that would prevent the blood from congealing. So it could be that there were certain situations that Gartley, there were certain basins which they did allow to have a base, they allowed to be a Gartley, and the Kifare were basins that did not have a base. They came to a point, I think I did see someone present that approach, that one of these different types of kalim came to a point, those were only used to be held, and you cannot put it down, so the blood should not congeal. Okay, but they're called Kifare Zahav. Now, why are they called Kifare? So, another many interpretations, some one of them, because they bring about atonement, Lashon of Kapara, that the dam, when you sprinkle the blood on the Mizbeach, the sprinkling of the blood is what brings Kapara for the Ba'alim, and therefore these utensils that assist the Kohanim in Zrikas Hadam are called Kifarei Zahav. Other Mefarshim learn that it means, like Rashi, we'll read Rashi, Kinoach, it means to wipe. After Kohen did a Zrika, well, how would the Kohanim deal with the blood? They would collect the blood on these utensils, they would then dip their finger, their etzba, and they would sprinkle blood on the Mizbeach. What would they then do? They would then take their finger and wipe it on the back side of the utensil. That is called Koifer. That's called, the word kufore is a word which means to wipe. They would wipe their wet finger on the back of the blood, so when they would dip their finger into the basin, they would now retrieve fresh blood. So the Kalim got a term called wipers. That's why these utensils, they wiped it on the back side of the utensils. So kufore zahav, basins of gold, shloshim 30. These are in additional to the agart lezahav in the previous pasuk. Then we have kufore chesef, mishnim, secondary. Here we have, these are, now it's obvious that they're secondary, being that they are made from silver. So it's not exactly clear why. I'm sorry. There are different interpretations of what this means. So, okay, let's right away jump to the Mitzudos Sion, Pasuk Yud, the second Dibra Masl, Mishnim, Loshen Shneim. What does that mean? Verotzel Loimar. Kifulim haroy l'shtamesh bohem b'shtei evreihen, which would mean that, like, you have a goblet. Okay, so you have a goblet that has a base. You can turn it upside down. Some kalim, regular utensil, it's only meant to be used. You have this in the Gemara. It's only meant to be used. The utensil stand has a stem or it has a flat base, and the utensil receptacle, and you fill it up with liquid. Then some of the more elaborate kalim have an elaborate base on the bottom, which is curved, which allows you to turn it upside down, and you can really use it. The top and the bottom. You want, let's say, the top is a certain measure. Top is a revius, and the bottom is a half of a revius. So you know that when you fill up the top, you have exactly one revius. When you turn it upside down, and you fill up the bottom, you have exactly a half of a revius. So this, according to the Mitzudas, what this pasuk means. These were called the kifore chesef, basins of silver, mishnim, loshnaf shneim, double. The top and the bottom. Or you can learn in a much simpler interpretation, it means they were secondary to the gold utensils. They were part of a set. You know, sometimes you have a set. You have gold and you have silver. One has nothing to do with the other. But sometimes you have a set. A complete set. So you have the primary kalim and you have the secondary kalim. When you're serving a meal, it's part, they look alike, they have the same design, they appear together, and if you're missing one, then your set is incomplete, and the value of the entire set goes down in value, and that's what it alludes to here as well when it says the word mishnim. So one more time, kifarei zahav shloshim, there were 30 gold utensils, kifarei chesef mishnim, arba meos 410. What the significance of these numbers are, I do not know. Chelim achid, other types of utensils, Aleph was 1,000. Let's see the Mitzudos David, the entire thing, then we'll run to the Rashi. Rashi, Mitzudos Tzion, okay, there's no Mitzudos David here, Mitzudos Tzion, because over here it's much more technical terms. Kiparei, Mizrakos. He's going to say what Rashi is going to say. Mizrakos, these are basins. The al shem shehakoyin hazorik, the koyin that did zrika, after he sprinkled one application on the mizbeach, hayimikaneach etzbeoy min hadam, he would wipe his finger from the blood, bisfas hamizrak, on the edge. Okay, he doesn't say on the back, he says on the edge. I remember learning another place on the back of the utensil, but here he learns that you wipe it along the surface. Lezeh kori koyfer, that's why it's called chof pei vavre, shehu inyan kinoach, it means to wipe. Uvid rabosenu zuchen levracha, we have this expression, sechte gittin, uvoy lechapure yodi, wants to wipe his hands. A person does an avera, and they want to wipe their hands on me. I remember the exact, you want to wipe your hands, you want to clean your hands, absolve yourself from any chait. This one did it. It's not my problem. So we define this expression of wiping your hands in reference to kipari, and that's exactly why these kalim are called kipari, because they would wipe their hands on the back of the utensils. Mishnim, milashon shnim, ratzolaymar kifulim, harohui lehishtamesh bohen b'shtei evrehen, on two sides, the top and the bottom. You have this in the Gemara. The Gemara talks of various kalim, even though it's not fit on the top, it can be fit to be used upside down on the bottom. Yeah.
What is the kapores referred to?
The kapores, that's the cover of the ark, obviously.
Oh, so that's not...
That's different. I'm not sure how that fits into this. Lashon of kapara. Okay, I'm not sure. Let's see over here Rashi. Rashi pasik yud kiparei mizrakim, same term, basins for blood. V'nikru kiparei meloshon kinuach moi dechiper yodei beglimei dechavei. I will wipe my hands with the garment of my friend. We find this expression in the Gemara. Al shem sham shahamikabel dam bemizrak. The one, the Kohen, that did the avoda of receiving the blood from the neck of the animal. Hoya mikaneach, he would wipe nitzoitzos hadam, the little drops of blood, shenitsu al yado, that spurted on his hand, bisfas hamizrak, any extra blood that was on his fingertips, on his fingers, that would make his, that he would want to remove, he would wipe it, bisfas, on the edge, hamizrak, mishnim. Then he writes, according to Rashi, shniyim kelim achaydim shalmin acher. Secondary, Rashi is not as elaborate as the mitzudos that had a double function, you can turn it upside down and use the base as a receptacle. Rashi simply says these were secondary utensils relative to the first, and obviously being that they were made from silver, not made from the more expensive gold, we have over here 410, and other kalim were 1,000. Kepasik yud aleph, kol kalim lazahov lachesef, all of the kalim of gold and silver were in total chameshes alofim v'arba meos, 5,400. Hakoil, all of these utensils, Hela Sheish Batzar, which we learned last week, either refers to Doniel because he suffered 6 traumatic experiences in his life. Sheish Batzar was another name. This was the Persian name for Doniel. His Hebrew name was Doniel, seemingly. That's not so simple. And his Babylonian name was Sheish Batzar. And his Persian name was Sheish Batzar. Why was he called Sheish Batzar? So we learned it was a play on the previous name of Belshazzar. But here it's Sheish, we learned in the Medrash, because he suffered 6 traumatic experiences, the 3 stages of exile, Yehoyakim, Yehoyachin, and Tzidkiyahu, that's 3. He suffered being thrown into the Goyiv Arroyos. His friends, Hananya, Mishol, Vazaria, were thrown into the furnace, and the 6th traumatic experience was in the beginning of the Malchus, and when they came to Golus, when the Nebuchadnezzar had a dream and did not know what the dream was, did not know the interpretation, and said, if the wise men do not tell me the dream and its interpretation, I will have them all executed. And indeed the process began, and there was a great threat to his life because of the panic of Nebuchadnezzar. Total of 6 traumatic experiences. That's why he's called Sheish Batzar. But we also learned last week that according to some opinions, Sheish Batzar refers to Zerubbabel. And Zerubbabel, we'll see in great detail later on, who was Zerubbabel? Some said he was also Nehemiah. Now we have over here Ezra and Nehemiah, Nehemiah ben Hakilai. So some learned that Zerubbabel and Nehemiah were one and the same. That would mean we have already at least 3 names for Nehemiah. Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, and here he's been called by a third name, Sheish Batzar. That's very difficult. We'll get to some of that later on, but we have at least 2 candidates for Sheish Batzar. So these 5,400 kelim were all brought up to Eretz Yisrael im he'olos hagola, together with those, the exiles who ascended to Eretz Yisrael, mibavel lirusholoim. Now, by the way, this is one of the first places we have this term that when you're going from, in Tanakh at least, that when you're going from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, you're going up. You make, that's where the expression comes, you make aliyah, right? So today he makes aliyah, he moves to Eretz Yisrael. Where does that come from? So if you don't know Tanakh, you would say it comes from the Gemara. Because the Gemara also says that the Abzerah, when he went up, they went up in Bavel, they went from Eretz Yisrael, they were in the Stalik, they went down to Bavel. So if you would not know, you would say it's a Talmudic term. It's a Talmudic term which has been translated into a Hebrew, you make aliyah, or you leave, you yoreit, you come down from Eretz Yisrael to Golus. But the truth is, the Gemara took it from this pasuk. I believe this is the first. If I'm not mistaken, they maybe have it in the Nevi'im Rishayim and other Nevi'im, in the Nevi'im Achrayim. But seemingly, this is a very distinct reference of where we have a concept of aliyah. Here you find for the first time im he'alois ha'goylah. With Mibavel to Yerushalayim, with the Goyla that going up from Bavel to Yerushalayim. Now, obviously, it's a very great difficulty in these psukim because it says here there's a grand total of 5,400. If we add up the numbers, the numbers of the Agartle Zahav and the Agartle Chesef and the knives and the Koifre Zahav, and it doesn't come out to 5,400, it comes out to, I think, a little bit less than half. So, what here is going on when it says that the total sum, Kol HaKelim, Laz So Rashi, I believe, answers this question. Let's see, Rashi pasuk yud aleph kol hakelim ato kol now kol cheshon haminuyin v'she'enon minuyin. Rashi right away recognized that the numbers do not add up, and he says this number includes what we've listed, what we have enumerated in pasuk tes and yud with other kelim which we have not enumerated, which were taken by Nebuchadnezzar from the Goyla, and now are being restored to Bnei Yisrael when they ascend to Eretz Yisrael. Kulam b'minyan echad. They're all in one calculation. Aval hachashuvin hu moina. We only counted above moina. We only counted above in the previous pasuk. Tes and Yud, the kelim which were distinguished. The ones that are not distinguished are not being counted, but we're just alluding to in the grand total. Many other Rishonim have other opinions. They want to suggest that it's not necessarily a sum of all the kelim together, but it was an additional gift. In other words, we have in Pasuk 10 and Pasuk Yud, we have over here the Agartle Zahav, Agartle Chesef, and the Kifare Zahav, and the Kifare Chesef, and other Kalim with the knives. These were the actual Kalim that remained from the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, that were taken by Nebuchadnezzar, or even before. These were Kalim that were taken from the time of the Golos Yehoyakim. At the time of the Golos Yehoyakim, 18 years before the Churban Bayis Rishon, Nebuchadnezzar, he took with him Miksas Klei Beis Hashem. So these were the real kelim that were once used in the Avod and the Bayis Rishon. In addition to restoring the stolen goods from the Beis HaMikdash, Koresh gave a gift of an additional new, brand new kelim, an additional 5,400 new kelim he took out of his own storehouse to present to the Jewish people as a gift to help them get started and to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So either it's Rashi, he's been koilel altogether, which would then mean that the other kelim could have also have been the original kelim that were used in the Beis HaMikdash, and we're just not enumerating exactly what they were. We're putting it together in one large number. But and the total of everything was 5,400, or like the other Rishonim, no. Pasuk Tes, Pasuk Yod are the original Kalim, which are being restored, and now we have an additional 5,400 Kalim, which are being presented as a gift to Klal Yisrael to help them get started in rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash.
2,700 approximately?
Yes.
So my first thought would be that they were duplicates, because in case something became common, they always had a backup.
Backup, okay.
Except for the ones that are okay. Like Shulchan and the menorah, right?
The only need that we learn, we have in the Kinos on Tisha B'Av, it's a Gemara in Masechta, it's a Mishnah, Masechta Tamid, that they needed exactly 93 kelim every single day for the avoda. 93. Now, what is the significance of the number 93? Here we have 5,400, but they actually needed for the bare minimum were 93. So we'll just discuss that. Why 93? So the Gemara says, well, it's not the Gemara, it's the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says because that's the number of times Hashem's name appears in Chagai, Zechariah, Umalachi. It's not clear if the number 93 was what they used during the time of the Bayis Rishon. It could be that they know there are different ways they can reuse the kelim over and over. You don't have to necessarily use the same, you don't have to use a new kli for every single avoda of the day. But in the Bayis Sheni, it's clear they had 93 kelim were used every single day for the communal offerings. And the Yerushalmi says, because that's the number of times Hashem's name appears in these three svarim, that's a very great difficulty, because if you count Chag, Zechariah, Malachi, you're not going to find exactly 93. And all of the Mefarshim, they struggle to make the exact calculation. And now the main question is, why would they want to make a zecher for Chagai, Zechariah, Umalachi? So I think the answer is very simple, because they were the last Nevi'im. And with their death, it was a traumatic experience for Klal Yisrael that Nevuah came to an end. So every single day they wanted to hold on to the good old days, the glorious days when they had prophets. We were so far removed from what it was to have prophecy. If we were living in a generation where we had prophecy, that's a direct line to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now it's lost. It's a traumatic experience. So they would hold on to the prophecy of Zechariah, Zechagai, Zechariah Malachi. They remembered by Hashem, the prophet brings Hashem into this world. Hashem's name appears 93 times in their combination of their three svarim of their prophets. So they had 93. Another approach, this Jewish, the reason why there were 93, if you look in the kina, I don't remember which kina it was, one of the kinos in Tisha B'Av discusses with Titus, there's a lot of repetition but there's repetition in describing the Churban, and we once suggested that the number 93 corresponds to the members of the Sanhedrin. Because in the Beis HaMikdash there was a double Sanhedrin. There was the Sanhedrin HaGadol that was comprised of 70 members. That's really 71. There's a machlokes in the Mishnah Masechta Sanhedrin where there's 70 or 71. Let's assume there Moshe Al Gabeim number 71 is different, but let's work with the approach there was 70, and there are many even in the Kinos it says sometimes 70, and there was the Sanhedrin Ketana, and that was located 23. 70 plus 23 is 93. So the Kalim represents, the ultimate clay shares is a human being. A person is earth, ofar min hu adama, with mayim, vayipach b'yap of nishmas chayim. A human being is the ultimate clay shares. And when they did the avodah, there has to be an understanding, the avodah is being done al pi derech Torah. It's not stoking. It's not people that are kofrim. The avodah of the Beis HaMikdash is only an avodah when it's done al das Torah, through the rules of the Torah, and therefore the kalim of the avodah was intertwined with the koyach of the Sanhedrin, which was captured in the number 93, the Sanhedrin Gedoyla, that stand the Lishkas HaGaz is right off to the side of the Azara, and the Sanhedrin Ketana that sat in the Ezras Noshim, right outside Shar Nikanor. There's another Lishkas, Sanhedrin Ketana, a grand total of 93 members of the Sanhedrin. But here, obviously, the Torah, this Pasuk, it's a very significant thing that we're making mention of the Kalim. We know it's hard, there's a lot of significance in the Kalim. I don't know what the significance is. You think the Beis HaMikdash, okay, the Aron, the Menorah, the Shulchan, the trumpets, the Kalim, the Beis, and the Mizrakos, is it really something that is so significant that the Psukim, the few Psukim that we have in Ezra, Nehemiah, should go through the effort of telling us, and they took exactly these number of bowls and these number of knives? It's self-understood. Why are we going into such detail? And why in the Kinos do we mention they woke up in the morning and the 93 Kalim were missing? No more. The Churban, how is the Kalir described the Churban? He has many descriptions, but he emphasizes they were traumatized because the 93 Kalim were missing. And you're not dealing with the Shulchan and the Menorah, he's talking about the Mizrakos, bowls. So I don't know, there's something a lot deeper, there's something a lot more to the significance of these Kalim and their numbers and what they represent, because the Psukim here, and we have over here three Psukim that are elaborating in very great detail the various types of Kalim with different names. Gartle and Kifoire and Chalofos. These are very strange names. These are not just regular names. Everything has Ramazim. What? The Gartle. Everything there are very strange names, and there obviously is a lot of significance in what is being presented over here. Okay, let's now go to Perek Beis.
Are they mentioned from the first Beis HaMikdash?
They're not.
Do we know how many were then?
We don't. This is the first time. I don't believe it's mentioned anywhere. These numbers are mentioned. These Kalim are mentioned anywhere else by the beginning of Shlomo HaMelech. I don't think it talks about the major Kalim. You know, the Shulchan and the Menorah and the Yam Shel Shlomo and the Kiar with the Muchni, these very elaborate wagons where they had the basins for the Kohanim to wash, but the regular Mizrakos to such detail and such unique names describing their function, I think this is the first time we come in contact with this, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, now we begin Perek Beis.
For the next place I'm here, because if you list it now,
yes,
then you would know for later.
Absolutely, that's you're saying a very important thing. The Bayis Sheni is really a hakdama to the Bayis Shlishi. Let's discuss this in a little more detail. This is a very interesting idea that's presented by the Tiferes Yisrael. Right, that's the Mishnayis, the Tiferes Yisrael. So he says a fascinating idea in Tanakh. We only have an exact record of the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Shlishi. The Bayis Rishon is presented in very great detail in Sefer Melachim. The Bayis Shlishi is presented in even greater detail at the end of Yechezkel. Okay, it's hard stuff. Baruch Hashem, there are a lot of very good svarim today that try to give us the best that we can understand of the Bayis Shlishi. But the Bayis Sheni doesn't exist in Tanakh. The details of what the Bayis Sheni look like, there is no mention whatsoever in Tanakh. Now the Mishkan, of course, we know, but the Mishkan was retired when they came into Eretz Yisrael. Of Mishkan Shiloh, which we don't really have much. We don't have much. Mishkan Shiloh is a very big mystery. It was there for 369 years, and Shiloh today, there's nothing there. They're already today. It's becoming a big thing to excavate and to figure out what was once there. It's becoming, but. The Bayis Rishon is in Tanakh, Sefer Melach, Bayis Shlishi. But the Bayis Sheni, garnished. There's nothing. Talmud! The Gemara, Talmud Bavli, is full, packed, heaped with Bayis Sheni. Describing in great Masechta Midos, and Masechta Yoma, in great Masechta Talmud, three Masechtas, Yoma, Talmud, and Midos, in very great detail, what the Bayis Sheni looked like. And the Bayis Sheni is very different than the Bayis Rishon, and it's very different than what it says in Yechezkel, the Bayis Shlishi. Where does the Bayis Sheni really come into the picture? What is going on? So the Tiferes Yisrael says a fascinating idea. He says the truth is there are only two Batei Mikdashos. There is the Bayis Rishon, and there is the Bayis what we call the Bayis Shlishi. This entire period over here, what we're learning about Ezra coming to rebuild after we finished the Niel, it was known to the Nevi'im and known to the Talmidei Chachamim that this is only a temporary structure. This Bayis Sheni, Klal Yisrael is going through at the beginning of Galus. There will be a very long Galus, and they need a solid foundation to get them through Galus. So this is going to be like the ultimate Beis HaKnesses, not really the Beis HaMikdash, that will get them going to prepare them, to give them the stamina and the spiritual strength to get through to the Geula Shleima when we will have the Bayis Shlishi. Now it goes on to explain, the Bayis Shlishi is a mystery. It's the Nevu, if you learn Sefer Yechezkel, you'll see the psukim are extremely difficult. And even though there are a lot of picture books, and there are a lot of Rishonim and Achronim that try to describe in detail what it's referring to, it's a mystery. It's not fully understood what exactly the Bayis Shlishi will look like. But there are certain interpretations which are safe, which it's not the exact detail, but it's a basic parva. You translate the psukim in a very plain understanding, which you will fulfill on a minimal level the interpretation of the Bayis Shlishi. Therefore, the Tiferes Yisrael explains that the Bayis Sheni that's being built now, that's going to be built, is a very simple understanding of the Nevuah of the Bayis Shlishi. They are building now, when Ezra comes back with Zerubbabel and all the various people that we're going to come in contact with, they're going to build the Bayis Sheni, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, the blueprint for for the Bayis Sheni is the words of Yecheskel, is the end of Sefer Yecheskel describing the Bayis Shlishi. The problem was they themselves, what he says, a little controversial, but that's what he says, they themselves did not have a full clear understanding of what Yecheskel meant, of what Yecheskel, how it should look. They interpreted his words the best that they could, and they built the Bayis Sheni, knowing that there's more detail that's missing, which will only be added and perfected with the Geula Shlema, Moshe Rabbeinu, and Tchias HaMeisim, and Melech HaMashiach, who will fill in the little details, the little gaps that were not understood by those that returned from the Golis to rebuild the Bayis Sheni. So there's a Bayis Rishon, there was a Mishkan that was retired. There was a Bayis Rishon, and to a certain degree the Bayis Rishon was retired. That was built up Piruach HaKodesh by Shlomo HaMelech. It was very different. There were a lot of very different things, the height, the dimensions. Okay, to us, you know, it looks the same. You see a structure, you see there's certain chambers, there's a Kodesh HaKodashim, and there's the Kodesh, and there's a Heichel. But if you look very carefully, there are major, major differences between the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni, and what appears to be in the Bayis Shlishi. The Mishkan was retired. The Bayis Rishon was built by Shlomo HaMelech, al pi Ruach HaKodesh, and by David. Blueprints. That was retired. Now we're coming to a new tkufa, a Bayis Shlishi. What's the blueprint? They opened up a Sefer Yecheskel, and there were prophets. Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, Ezra. We have Mordechai. We have a lot of very holy people. But they were limited in fully understanding the details of what the Bayis Shlishi is supposed to look like. They built a model which would fulfill the basic requirements and would leave out all of the small details until it can one day be understood. That's where the Bayis Sheni comes in relates to the Bayis Shlishi. So you're right, over here we're coming back, we're bringing all these Kalim, or everything was really meant to one day lead into the ultimate Bayis Shlishi. So let's just begin a little bit of the Parag Beis. Ve'ele b'nei ha-medina ha'ilim m'shvih ha-goyla asher he'glon v'chanetzar melech bavel li-bavel v'yeshuvu li-yushalayim v'yehuda ish li-ro. So let's just do this one pasuk. There's a lot going on in this one pasuk. Now, we're going to go through a lot of names. And the names, it's very interesting. There's a lot to discuss. It seems like you just read through the names, but there are a lot of very interesting things. And what makes it the most very interesting is because this perek, all of the list of names that we're going to come in contact with, which is about close to 30,000 people, okay, and we're going to go through all the various families. Maybe I'll make a photo, a very good chart which goes through all the numbers. There are about 30,000 people broken up into different numbers. Is repeated once again in Sefer Nehemiah. So it's recorded over here in Sefer Ezra, and then in Sefer Nehemiah it's repeated again, but not exactly the same. Nehemiah is recording what happened when Ezra. The difference in time between the Aliyah of Ezra, when Ezra went up to Eretz Yisrael, and Nehemiah, is 36 years. So Ezra now is going up 18 years before the binyan will be finished. They were expecting it to be finished immediately. They thought it would take a year or two, they would have the Mikdash up and running. Little did they know that after they finished the foundation, they arrived, they finished the foundation, Haman's 10 sons made a lot of trouble and put an end to it, convinced Koresh they should stop. And then there was a delay until the second year of Daryovesh. And then later, then Daryovesh, after Achashverosh and the Megillah, after he died, his son took over under the influence of Esther. They started rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash. It took 6 years. So there was a very good time gap from the time that they thought they were going to build it until it actually was built. It was 30. And then after it was built, there was a second wave of return during the time of Nehemiah. And that during that time of return, Nehemiah recorded, gave kavod to the pioneers. And that's a lot of Mepharshim say. The reason why all these names are recorded here is to give these people honor. because these people were all living a very good life in Bavel, a very comfortable life, and we'll see in a moment, I'll show you some, there's some very interesting things. These people, most of these people were people that were exiled by Nebuchadnezzar 18 years before the Churban. The people that were exiled 18 years before the Churban were taken as royal captives. They weren't taken as just, when the Churban happened, when Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed the Mikdash, the time of Tzidkiyahu, they just murdered everyone. They couldn't care less. There was no dignity. It was just, we're going to destroy this city. We're going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Fend for yourselves and suffer. 18 years ago, that was not Nebuchadnezzar's intent. His intent was, I'm in control. I want Yerushalayim to be a functioning city. Pay tribute. And in fact, the better, the more success, the more successful you are, the better it is for me. If Yerushalayim is a city that is successful, that is has a healthy economy, that means you're going to pay higher taxes. There'll be more for me to tax. So when Nebuchadnezzar came to conquer Yehoiakim 18 years before the Churban, in the second year Nebuchadnezzar rose to power, he came to Yerushalayim with dignity, and he conquered them with dignity. And he just wanted to let them know, I am in control. Continue what you're doing. You can have a Beis HaMikdash. You can serve Hashem. You can do, but you can't have this king because you have to have someone who's loyal to me. I'm taking your king with me. And I'm going to take prisoners. But I'm going to treat the prisoners with dignity. Because if I don't treat them with dignity, then everyone's going to rebel and I'll have nothing. It was like a joint venture, so to speak. Therefore, these people that are now making Aliyah were people that were treated very well. They were taken to Bavel. They lived in the capital. They had good lives. They've been living now there for almost 70 years, because 52 plus the 18, they were already established. 70 years, they had children and grandchildren. And now they gave up everything. Everything to go to a land lechtech acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo zerua. Eretz Yisrael reports came back from Eretz Yisrael, there wasn't even a bird. It was pikuach nefesh. I remember hearing that when they came to, they made aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, and they made aliyah during the 20th century. So I remember reading, so it was a certain neighborhood, which probably today is probably booming. There was not a soul there, and they brought in scientists to determine if they should develop this the scientists said, no, don't develop. There's something wrong because there are no birds. And there are no birds. How come there are no birds here in this?
There was no food for them.
And it was very disturbing. And they figured there must be something wrong with the environment. It must be poisonous, must be dangerous, and it's not safe to build a yeshiva in this part. This is probably the 1950s. Okay, 1950s, 1960s. I don't remember the end of the story. I don't remember the details, but that was the story. They came back, and Chazal say, a bird didn't chirp in Eretz Yisrael for 52 years. They come back to Eretz Yisrael, they spy the land, they spy the land, there's nothing, zero, there's no water, there's no food, there's no animals. And yet these people who have been living as royal captives, royal prisoners, with all of the amenities of Bavel had to offer, gave up everything they had in order to go make Aliyah, to return to Eretz Yisrael, to rebuild, reestablish Eretz Yisrael. It was an incredible sacrifice, which is hard for us to imagine, and therefore it's recorded for posterity in Ezra and Nehemiah. Very great honor to these people and their families. Their names and their families are recorded. To us, it seems very boring. What's the big deal over here? Like, this is an honor roll. That's exactly what this is. And this honor roll is recorded twice, here in Sefer Ezra and again in Sefer Nehemiah. And in Sefer Nehemiah, there are discrepancies, and that's what makes everything so interesting. Why are there discrepancies? Nehemiah, 36 years later, is basically repeating exactly, let me also give honor to the pioneers. We're now making Aliyah 36 years later, and now we have running water, and we have plumbing, and we have electricity, we have all of the amenities of Eretz Yisrael, we have an economy in Eretz Yisrael, and we're going to now eat off the fat of the land. We have to give kavod where kavod is due to the pioneers. And it repeats, Nachamal repeats, but it repeats it with differences, different numbers, different names. And that wakes up all of the Mefarshim. Why here is this one's name recorded and over here this one's name is missing? Why here is the number 6 and there is the number 8? What's the discrepancy? What's all of the discrepancies all about? So there are different answers. One answer, some of the answers are that Nehemiah filled in some of the details. They were, some want to say there were errors made originally, or things, people were known differently 36 years later. 36 years later, person became very distinguished, or maybe he went bankrupt and had to change his name. So even though here in Ezra his name appears to be Goldstein, but Goldstein went bankrupt. So when Nehemiah was talking, he couldn't say Goldstein, so he had to say Cohen, because no one would know who he's talking about, but really they're one and the same person. Things like that. Or why the numbers? Because people, originally the people, we don't list every single person by name. When they originally made Aliyah, he was a kid. He was a 5-year-old kid, so it wasn't kedai to record him, to list him as part of the number. But 36 years later, he became the Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael. So you're not going to go list him, even though it's true, 36 years ago he was a nothing. He was only a little kid in the crib. But now he's so distinguished, if we put on the honor roll, the pioneers, and we don't mention this person, you have to rewrite history a little bit. Yeah. That's really like, just like today you have all the gedolim from 30 years ago, you can't say this story, you can't. Because this generation, they just don't get it. They don't understand what it was like. So it'll give the bad impression, so you have to polish it up a little bit. That's, to some degree, I'm not saying some degree, some of the Farshim learned, that's really what Nehemiah was doing. He was polishing up some of the skeletons about the past to relate to the way people lived and they perceived things at the time. But there's no falsehood, because you can go look at Ezra and you can see the exact record, and you can figure out the gaps in between the two. Okay, now there's another, okay, one of those, one of this whole pasuk, Bela Bnei HaMedina, there's a whole issue of what is the Medina. Who is the Medina? So it's an important machlekes Rashi ibn Ezra. Rashi says, Bela Bnei HaMedina, Ela Bnei Yisrael. The Medina here refers to the Medina. Right, the Medina. It's an old term. You think of the Medina only 1948. The Medina existed. Vice Rishon was called the Medina. So the Eila Bnei HaMedina. These are the members of the original Medina of Eretz Yisrael, who were exiled and now are returning. So they maintained their identity when they were in Golis by being referred to as the people of the old Medina of Eretz Yisrael, who are now Ha'olim, are returning Mishvi HaGoyla, from the captivity of the Gola. Other Mefarshim, Ibn Ezra learns the Medina means Medinas Bovel. Like you say in the Gilas Esther, Uvachol Medina, Umedina, Uvachol Ir, Vo'ir, means these are the people, they live together, they live in a ghetto. They live together. The Eila Bnei HaMedina, these are the members of the Medina of Bavel. They were a neighborhood in Bavel. Ha'ilim, which are now coming up, Mishvi Ha'agol, from the exile, from the captivity of the Gola. Asher Hegel Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, Li Bavel. And that's a very important word, because this word Li Bavel does not appear in Nehemiah. In Nehemiah, when we're going to have the same exact thing recorded in Perek Zayin, word for word, the opening pasuk is almost identical, but the word Li Bavel is absent. Why is the word Bavel absent? Because here we want to focus on the original captives, the original exiles who were taken by Nebuchadnezzar 18 years before the Churban. And where were they put? They weren't just, okay, we're taking you captive, we're going to throw you somewhere in
Siberia.
Go to Canarsie. No! You're going to go, Melech, I'm taking you, Melech Bavel, Le Bavel. I'm going to treat you, you're sitting here in Washington, D.C. with me. I'm taking you to exile, and where am I putting you? I'm putting you in the best, because I want to treat you with dignity. Why do I want to treat you with dignity? So where you come from, Eretz Yisrael, they should not rebel against me. They should continue to be successful and pay tribute. So therefore, Melech Bavel, Libavel, he took them Libavel. But in Nehemiah alludes in his time, 36 years later, now who is now returning? Not just the the royal captives, the Hamoinam, the people living in Siberia, they also now decided to come back to Eretz Yisrael together, and he recorded. So therefore, that's why here, that's a very big difference between the return in the time of Nehemiah, which was 36 years later. There, the masses returned. Not everyone returned, unfortunately. Only a small percent returned. Only a total of 42,360 returned. But there, it was the masses. And that's why there, he does not refer to Asher Heglin Vuchanetza Melch Bavel LeBavel. Doesn't say Lubov. There refers to Shahel Nebuchadnezzar and Melech Bavel, period. There, that's referring to the people that were exiled at the time of Tzidkiyahu. And when they were exiled at the time of Tzidkiyahu, he couldn't care less than Nebuchadnezzar. He just says, go. Judge, he put them all over the world. By Yeshuvu li Yerushalayim, they return to Yerushalayim, the Yehuda ish li Iro. Now, what does it mean Yehuda? So the different interpretations. Either Yehuda refers to, they return to, the Yehuda means the people of Shevet Yehuda, the actual members, or the word v'Yehuda is referring to the word v'Yeshuvu. They return to the region of Yehuda and to Yerushalayim. Just one other point is that when they did return, this pasuk already is alluding to this. When they did return, the kibush sheni, they did not reconquer the entire Eretz Yisrael. This is a very important point. We have to run out of time. We'll just stop here. Just to review this. We'll go over this a little bit more tomorrow and the Rashi tomorrow. But the very important point is here they're returning. The Chazal tell us, according to some of the opinions in the Gemara, that when Eretz Yisrael was conquered by Nebuchadnezzar, the kedusha of the land was bottom. Kibush kedusha rishayna kitsha l'shaita v'loy kitsha l'asalava. When Yahushua conquered the land for the first time, and they were there for 480 years until they 440 years until they built the Beis HaMikdash, plus another 410 years that they lived there. That kedusha was in the land only as long as the Jewish people were living in the land. When the Nebuchadnezzar came and conquered them, and they left, the kedusha left. It was bottled. If a person would happen to come there during the time of the Golus, he has no obligation to simafrish Shuman Meiser. He has no obligation to observe Shemitah, because there's no kedusha. The kedusha of the land is bottled. Now the Beis HaMikdash is a different story. The Har HaBayis, according to most opinions, that was never bottled. That sanctity was never. Some said, no, Pum Fakert. If that was certainly bottled. But okay, the different opinions, the two different kedushas. There's the land and there's the Har HaBayis. Now, when Ezra is returning, they're coming, not only are they returning to live, they're coming to re-sanctify the land. But they did not re-sanctify the entire territory that was sanctified originally. They only sanctified a smaller amount. So therefore, like they always hear today, like the different, like go Eilat, or go further down from Eilat, Sinai, these lands, there's always a debate. Do they have Kedushas HaAretz or not? Do you observe on these days 2 days Yom Tov, or do you observe 1 day? So different opinions, different parts of Eretz Yisrael. Everyone agrees that though these lands that they're talking about had Kedusha during the time of the Bayis, even Gaza, there's a controversy. What's its status? Everyone agrees it had Kedusha during the time of the Bayis Risha. But did the Goyla, the people who came during the time of Ezra, did they sanctify it during the time of the second kibush? And this passing, now there's no question about it that there are certain segments that were not re-sanctified. That we know for sure. Questions exactly what, exactly where, what. But here there's an indication of that idea that the entire land was not re-sanctified. Vayashuvu, where did they return to? They returned only Yerushalayim, the Yehuda, Ish liro, each person to his city. So what does that mean exactly? Each person to his city. What about the places where there were no cities originally, which had Kedusha? In other words, there were parts of the land that had Kedusha, but there were no cities. And so when the land was conquered, those areas of land were bottled. Right? There was a whole vast land. Not every part of the land had a city. And then when they left, everything was bottled. Now when they're coming back to re-sanctify it, And that sanctification will last forever. That sanctification lasts kedusha shni kitchel shaita vikitchel yasalava. That remains with us even today when there is no Beis HaMikdash. But it says here they only came back ish li'iro. That's what they conquered. That's what they repossessed. Other parts they did not repossess, did not gain, did not regain sanctity. That's waiting for the time of Mashiach. And it's very difficult to know what part of the land did the Kedusha, what part did not. Let's maybe run to the Rashi's one Rashi in Pasuk Aleph very quickly. Ve'ele b'nei ha-medina. So Rashi Lishtasa learns Asher b'nei Yisrael, Asher b'medinas Eretz Yisrael. Rashi is very clear. Medina refers to Eretz Yisrael. Ha'olam Pasuk Aleph. Pasuk Aleph. Ha'olam atu atam in Asher Shvi. Asher b'goyle l'yushlaim v'yeshuvu at v'at in achozru l'yushlaim. And Rashi learns v'yehuda. Very interesting Rashi. Doesn't mean they return to the region of Yehuda. Okay, there are different parts of the land. There's the region of Yehuda. There's a region of the Galil. There's a region of Eiver HaYarden. There are different regions. It's not what it says here. Yehuda uvenei Yehuda. That's how Rashi Vatayich, the people of Bnei Yehuda Chazru called Echad V'Yachal Liro. If you look at the Mitzudas, he says differently. Mitzudas Pasuk Aleph, Bnei HaMedina, Bnei Medina Seret Yisrael. He looks like Rashi Bnei Medina Seret Yisrael. Ha'ilem Ata Mimasha Ho'yu B'Shevi Agolava Yeshuvu Ata Shavu. He doesn't focus on the word. He doesn't focus on the word Yehuda. I think Ibn Ezra says Yehuda means the region. Where do you put the comma? He returned to Yerushalayim. They returned and to the region of Yehuda, Ish Liro, not the Bnei Yehuda. Okay, because the reason why Rashi is a little bit more precise is because now the families that we're going to list now, the first segment of families are people who are from the Bnei Yehuda. Okay, so we'll stop here with Pasuk Beis.